This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got sunny skies this afternoon. Blustery, a high temperature around 50, currently 47 degrees at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow is now fractionally higher. We're at 25,798. The NASDAQ up 11 points, S&P adding 6. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index fractionally lower. Housing starts dropped for the first time in 3 months in September as Hurricane Florence slammed into the Carolinas. Construction of both single-family homes and apartments declined. Building permits, that's seen as a gauge for future construction, were also down. That added to the property market's woes. Mortgage applications are down again, falling 7.1% last week. Rising interest rates are probably contributing to the weakness. Mortgage applications last increased in the middle of September. The Fed is on track to raise rates again before the end of the year. At 2 o'clock Wall Street time, so in a little less than an hour, the Fed will issue minutes of its last month's policy meeting. The Fed has been gradually nudging rates higher to guard against inflation. At last month's session, central bankers lifted the federal funds rate another quarter point. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
In today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to tell you why Netflix shares are soaring today. We'll be checking the marijuana sector in Canada and how to make your retirement last.
Chuck Carlson is going to join us to talk about the Dow theory and what the transportation industry may be predicting about the future, at least in the near term, for the markets. All of that and loads more still to come on today's Noon Business Hour.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Netflix is on a roll. Wall Street is responding. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, let's check the Dow theory and transportation stocks as a market indicator. We welcome Chuck Carlson, who's CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Chuck. For those of our listeners who haven't heard you yet about explain what the Dow theory is, can you do that for us? And also, what is it telling us right now?
Sure. The Dow theory basically looks at the movement of two important indices, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the Dow Jones Transportation Average. And it looks at those two averages because of their importance to the overall economy. Both of those indices represent very important aspects of the economy. The transports maybe being the most economically sensitive. So what you want to see is both of those indices, you know, moving in lockstep to higher highs, which we saw in mid to late September, where both the Dow Jones Industrial and Dow Jones Transportation averages both moved to new all-time highs. The transports September 14th, and I believe the industrials then on September 21st. So those new highs basically confirmed the primary trend of this market being bullish. Now, what we have had since then, obviously, is a pretty significant correction, and I emphasize correction, and I don't believe the beginning of a bear market, where you did have the Dow Jones Transportation Average fall about 10% down to from about September 14th to October 11th. The good news is that the average has kind of gathered itself and is starting to kind of move higher again, and I think it's benefiting. We're seeing some of the action today in some select transport stocks, such as airlines, where you had United Airlines come out with pretty good results, and I think that's causing a little bit of ease on that sector. And I still think there is good value in the transports, and I still think they bode well in terms of indicating that the economy is still intact.
So it's an indicator for the market as well, not just one stock.
Yes, it is. It's very difficult. If you look back through the history of the markets, it's very difficult for the broad market to sustain an upward move without help from the transportation stocks. So, if people are kind of looking and wondering what to watch here in terms of whether this is in fact the beginning of something more serious or a correction. The Dow Jones Transportation Average is probably as good as anything to watch. You don't want the transports just breaking down in an ugly fashion. That would infiltrate the rest of the market. So, they tend to be kind of a leading indicator for both the economy as well as the stock market.
And is it purely the transport stocks, or do you dig a little deeper and see specifically how those companies are doing as far as how many packages they're shipping or how many trains they actually have out there? The reason I ask is because there might be other things going on in a company that might impact stock, but isn't necessarily going to mean that there are fewer people using them.
Yeah, I guess if what you're asking me is if, you know, to dig down deeper to see if there's unique things happening to individual components within the Dow transports. Yeah, we do that. But you know, we do kind of rely on indices reflecting kind of what's out there and what's being seen across the spectrum of transportation stocks, whether that's railroads, airlines, truckers, you know, the parcel delivery, et cetera. So, you can have and that's one of the reasons why the Dow Jones Transportation Average can be a pretty volatile index. I mean, you're talking about 20 stocks, and certainly you can have some unique problems in a couple of those stocks that could hinder the index. But overall, you know, the assumption when you look at indices themselves as indicators is that, you know, they're kind of, it's like Prego. It's reflecting what's out there and what people are thinking, whether it's, you know, shipments, energy prices, whether it's pricing for fares, as is the case in the airline sector, et cetera.
Yeah, and I guess you're trusting on overall investors kind of getting the sentiment, and it's reflected in the stock price. Dow Theory bullish?
Yes, the Dow Theory is bullish, and you know, we regard this latest move downward as a correction. And again, it fits the characteristics of a correction. I mean, corrections within bull markets basically are supposed to scare the heck out of investors. That's how you take the froth out of the market. They tend to be pretty abrupt and very violent, but they tend to be fairly short-lived, lasting anywhere from about 3 weeks to 3 months. So, you know, this has those characteristics so far of kind of the violent abruptness, but my guess is this will be fairly short-lived.
Did you say, Chuck, that United Airlines is in a good place?
Well, they are today. I mean, you know, I think they came out with results that showed that they are showing some pricing power, which is always very important in the airline sector. And they are showing some volume gains, which is important and kind of reflective of a stronger economy and more travel. But the pricing power, I think, was what really has helping that stock jump up today. You know, people like to see that in the airline sector, that they do have the ability to raise fares, and that seems to be the case right now.
All right, Chuck, good talking to you. I do want to say you were our stock picker Monday. You picked FedEx, and well, they're up about $5 a share just in the last 2 days. So.
Well, I thought it was a pretty cheap stock. Still think it's a cheap stock. It's down a hair today, but I think, you know, you're looking at a stock that's down about $50 from its 52-week high. So I think there's still plenty of upside there. And if you believe the transports are going to come back, then that's a stock that you ought to take a look at.
Chuck, always good to have you on. We'll have you back again soon. Thanks so much. Chuck is CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Up next, quarterly report from Netflix shows strong subscriber growth.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Netflix added almost 7 million subscribers in the quarter just ended, mainly in overseas markets. Multiple analysts have revised their stock price target upward. Let's discuss what's working for the video streaming service. Neil Macker is joining us, senior equity analyst at Morningstar here in Chicago. Neil, Netflix just seems to keep showing that it can grow that subscriber base.
Yeah, it definitely does look like they can grow the subscriber base, especially internationally, as you discussed. The question will become, can they offset that with some cash, you know, not burning so much cash as they have in the recent past?
Are they doing, similar to Amazon at the beginning, where they're just investing so much into the product where they're obviously hoping that later on it pays dividends?
Yeah, a little different though. Amazon, we saw it more on the net income side where they were taking losses there, but their cash burn was never actually as big as Netflix's is. And so Netflix is definitely doing it, operating income positive or net income positive, I should say, but cash flow negative. And so that's sort of the difference here. And so what this means for Netflix is they're going to continue to have to go to the debt market to raise cash in order to invest in content.
And so they're doing well in France and Germany, in continental Europe. But who are they competing against there?
Yeah, in continental Europe, there's some local players like Vivendi, Canals Plus. Vivendi has some pieces there in Germany and in France. They're obviously competing against Amazon. We expect companies like Disney and Warner Media to expand over there at the back end of 2019 as well.
And is Netflix the leader here in the United States in this area?
Yes, they are in streaming video. Right now, Amazon probably overall Prime has more subscribers, but we do think more of the Prime subscribers are using it for the two-day delivery. So if we look at actual usage, Netflix is definitely the leader right now on the subscription video on demand market.
And do you have a recommendation on the stock?
I'm actually bearish on the stock. I've been a little bearish on the name for a while. My fair value is at 120 right now. We just think the cash burn is continuing over the next few years, and we're not sure how valuation plays out, but you can support 360 and above type of number.
Neil Macker, thanks for being with us. Neil is Senior Equity Analyst at Morningstar here in Chicago. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to build a retirement fund that will last. WBBM News Time, 12:25, a check of Wall Street from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, Cisco, the Dow is now lower by 42 points or 0.2%, and the benchmark's at 25,756. NASDAQ still up a fraction of a point, and the S&P gaining 3. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is fractionally lower. Crude futures sinking about 2.5% now to $70.19 a barrel. Now let's check in with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are mixed as we go through the noon hour. Spread activity has been the dominant feature. A clearer harvest week has provided resistance, but lower yield prospects for the Northwest and Southeast has provided support. The next market maker will be Thursday morning's weekly export sales report, which is expected to show another good round of sales. Corn futures are mixed. Soybeans are 1 to 1 3/4 cents higher, and the wheat market's down 5 to 6 cents. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Kurt. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are again heading lower. Mixed markets. We'll see what's impacting Wall Street.
Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to build your retirement portfolio over time so that you won't be caught short.
Mayor Emanuel introduces a final budget that would hold the line on taxes, fines, and most fees.
President Trump says he senses voter optimism going into the midterm elections, but adds that he won't be the one to blame if Republicans lose control of the House.
Wall Street, the Dow down 30, NASDAQ down 3, the S&P up 1 point. Oil today is down 2.5%.
WBBM News Time, 12:31.
It's going to be a very, very sunny day in Chicagoland with no rain in the forecast for at least the next couple of days. Heading to a high near 50. Right now, 44 at O'Hare and Midway, 45 along the lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
It has been up and down today on Wall Street. Right now, we're mixed. Let's talk with Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Vahan. Our last guest told us that he sees, according to the Dow theory, that he sees bullishness. How would you describe the markets right now?
Well, I would describe the markets right now as a big war between the bulls and the bears, and it's not clear who's going to win. I can't be extremely bullish, however, because I think the stock market has done extremely well for a prolonged period of time, and it's time for a rest. So I am looking for a pullback, especially in some of the what I would consider the overvalued names. But I think this war between the bulls and the bears may continue, and as a result, we'll see this higher level of volatility.
Are there undervalued areas that you're interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are a number of undervalued stocks. In fact, one of the things that we've noticed in recent years is that as a group, the growth stocks have significantly outperformed the value stocks, making the value stocks even more attractive right now. But, you know, today, for example, we are witnessing a huge sell-off in IBM, which I think is a very undervalued stock. I mean, this is a company that generates tremendous cash flows, has a very good dividend, but it has no growth. And as a result, it's being punished. IBM sells for only 1.5 times sales. Yet on the other hand, we have a company like Tilray, the marijuana company, that sells for 500 times sales and has no earnings. Even some of the best growth stocks, such as Netflix, sell for only 11 times sales. So there are some serious disconnections in the market.
And what do you make of that? Why the disconnection? Is it just some stocks are sexier than others, or what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, there is a there are a group of investors that are really flocking to growth. So they're looking for growth, and you know, Tilray, even though it has no earnings, certainly does have top line growth and has the promise for even more top line growth. But what these investors have done is that they've bid up the price so high that it would be extremely dangerous for anybody to step in at this level. On the other hand, you know, investors have been avoiding things that aren't growing. And as you know, IBM has had a lot of trouble as it's been trying to shift from its legacy businesses to more of the higher growth businesses that it calls the strategic alternatives. It does have pockets of growth, but its overall top line is not really growing much. In fact, this last quarter, it was down slightly. So even though it generates tremendous cash flow, investors are avoiding stocks that are not growing revenues.
You've touched on Tilray. Now that marijuana is legal in Canada, and even just medical marijuana, it's legal in more places here in the U.S. Talk about some of the risks with the pot stocks, and maybe are there opportunities too?
Well, I mean, certainly the business holds some promise. I mean, I think it's certainly true that marijuana will probably be legalized in more and more places, both for medicinal and recreational uses. So companies in this area are very likely to see more growth. I have no qualm with that. My problem is that the stocks are tremendously overvalued. I'm not going to pay 500 times earning or 500 times sales, excuse me, for any company that doesn't have earnings and doesn't have the possibility of making earnings for several years. So I think Tilray certainly has value. You know, perhaps it should be selling for $50 a share rather than $150 a share. But at the current value, I would not touch it.
Well, if in fact there's not that validity to it, and it is at $150, what does that say about the market?
Well, the market is overvalued in some areas. You know, overall, I couldn't say that the market is tremendously overvalued because on average, we do have pretty good earnings, and we do have pretty good earnings growth, although in my opinion, the growth in earnings is reaching the peak. You know, in the United States, we've had a tremendous help in earnings from tax reform. That's not likely to continue. There is another tax package being considered, but that really addresses individuals rather than corporations. So next year, I'm not expecting to see a big bump up in earnings like we got this year. So I would say the market overall is probably fairly valued, but you know, as I said, there are some areas that are tremendously overvalued and other areas that are undervalued.
And given the challenge with just not sharing which pot companies are going to stick around and which aren't, do you anticipate investors looking more toward pot ETFs instead of trying to pick and choose winners in individual companies?
Well, that would certainly be the safer way to do it. There is an ETF. The ticker symbol is MJ. It does include many of these pot stocks, including Tilray. You know, it is a little bit safer to buy an ETF because it is a diversified portfolio. Yet, you know, it's also includes stocks that are very overvalued. But yes, if I was going to invest in this area, I would prefer to do it with an ETF rather than try to pick individual winners or losers.
What areas would you suggest if our listeners were saying, well, where do you think we should look for some values and investments?
Well, you know, I mentioned IBM, but as far as a particular sector goes, I think one of the most undervalued sectors right now is financials. We recently saw several banks announce absolutely outstanding results. We're in a period where the yield curve has steepened a bit and may continue to steepen, which is very good news for the financials. Yet the financial stocks haven't really reacted much to that. So I am actually putting fresh money into financials. And again, I use an ETF for that. One of my favorites is the XLF because it's a very liquid ETF.
Vahan, always nice to have you on our noon business hour. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to build a solid retirement fund.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
In our next segment, how to get your retirement cash to last. But before that, we have to get to saving for retirement in the first place. It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. Helping you save for retirement and get started if you haven't yet. Kelly Long is joining us, financial planner with Financial Finesse here in Chicago. Kelly, what's your first piece of advice to people who, for one reason or another, have just been waiting to even get started on retirement savings?
Biggest thing I would say is the sooner you can get started, the more you'll have in the long run. So even 10 years can make a difference of literally a third. So, you know, if you wait till you're 40, you might only have $300,000, but starting at 30, you could have $1 million. So that's literally three times as much. So just understanding even a little bit has a lot more power of saving. But also there are some ways to do it that might seem a little bit, you don't have to just go all in with 15% into your 401k or your IRA. Your job, try to get the match that your job might offer, but if even that's too much, look to see if they have a tool called an auto escalator, which would allow you to add a percentage on each year and kind of more painlessly get used to saving without having to jump right in.
Yeah, the set it and forget it of the employer 401k plan, is that a benefit? I mean, once you get it started, it comes out of your paycheck, and as long as you can afford it, you don't even really think about it.
Absolutely. And getting up to at least that match, make sure you're not getting rid of any free money or giving away any free money or basically turning down a raise. But beyond that, if you don't have a 401k or once you're saving to the match, a lot of people don't realize that with a Roth IRA, you can withdraw your contributions at any time. And so one of the reasons people don't save more for retirement is they're afraid they're going to need the cash sooner for like an emergency fund. So your Roth IRA can actually be a dual purpose when you're first getting started. You know, maybe that first $1,000, put it in a Roth IRA is, you know, let's say that Roth IRA grows to $1,200. You can withdraw that initial $1,000 and just leave the $200 growth for retirement at any time without any penalties, any reason. So understanding that can help you use that type of account for two purposes and allay that fear of not being able to access the money for a long time.
Do you have a calculation of how much somebody needs from that pot?
It really depends on your personal situation. We like to say you should be saving enough to replace 80% of your income. So on the website FF for Financial Finesse, ffcalcs.com, there's a retirement estimator calculator that helps you project out what that amount will be. So it really depends on how much money you make and how much money you'll need. So somebody who is going to have three houses around the country is going to need a lot more than someone who has their mortgage paid off and plans to live in that house forever.
How aggressive should people be? It probably depends on your age, but some people are just afraid of losing that money, so they maybe lose some gains.
Yes, the longer you have, the more aggressive you should be. And just know that since the modern stock market started, you know, over the last 100 years, there's never been a period of 20 years where you weren't better off investing in the market than you would have been 20 years before. So if you've got 20 years or more, don't even worry about what's happening in the market today. You will have more money in 20 years or more than you start with today. And you just, like you said, you got to set it and forget it.
Kelly, thanks so much for the information. Kelly Long is financial planner with Financial Finesse here in Chicago.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, a double dose of Personal Finance Wednesday. Strategies for using your nest egg in retirement without draining it too quickly.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is sponsored by Elmhurst BMW.
Let's extend our conversation about retirement, a challenge of building a retirement account. But once you have, how can you make it last for as long as possible? We're going to get some tips now from Liz Weston, columnist for NerdWallet, author of the books Deal With Your Debt and Your Credit Score in the fifth edition in Los Angeles. Liz, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. How can you assure that you're not going to run out of money during a long retirement?
Well, it's pretty difficult, actually, and there's a lot of disagreement among financial planners. But one rule that's been in place for a while, it's called the 4% rule, has you starting with a 4%, withdrawing 4% of your portfolio, and then adjusting it for inflation as you go. Now, that historically has ensured that, you know, your chances of running out of money will be very low. The problem is a lot of people are seeing lower returns going forward. They're worried that that might be too aggressive, and so now they're recommending 3.5 or 3%.
And also there can be any kind of problem in which you have to get some money and take care of. You know, it doesn't go rather smoothly all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And the big problem is if you're taking withdrawals in a down market, then you're pulling money out of a shrinking pool, and that money isn't there to benefit from the rebound. So that's the problem. People think, well, my portfolio is making all this money, I should be fine. You got to think day in and day out, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, and you're also going to have to deal with inflation. That's why the 4% rule was originally created, is they went back and looked at historical returns and thought, okay, this is a rule that actually will keep people from running out of money, but it's not guaranteed. And again, if you have to go into your portfolio and take more, you know, take a big chunk while the market is down, you do run the risk of running out of money prematurely.
Now, does this, so for someone who's planning, do they say, okay, here's how much I need to live on, whatever it is, here's what I need each year, and then they go back and do the math and figure out what that's 4% of, and I'm trying to think of how they get to the big number of how much they need at retirement.
Yeah, it is kind of, there's a lot of different moving parts, but one of the things you can think about is you take how much money you're spending now and maybe, you know, downsize it a little bit because you typically don't spend as much when you're not working and commuting and doing all that. And then you take out what you'll get from other sources like Social Security or pension. That's the amount that you need to cover. And if that amount is 4% of your current portfolio, then maybe it's time to retire. I would still run this past a fee-only financial planner, though. You really do want another set of eyes on your calculations to make sure that you're not missing something. Something else to think about is that you can get an annuity, which is, you know, you give a chunk of money to an insurance company, they give you back a guaranteed series of checks, typically that last for life. And a lot of, you know, financial planners are saying now maybe you want to consider making sure that all your basics are covered with guaranteed income, whether that's a pension, Social Security, or an annuity, or a combination of those, to make sure that you don't run short of money.
Liz Weston, great advice. Thanks for being with us. Liz is a columnist for NerdWallet. Bloomberg checks the markets next. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, here's where we stand. The Dow is down 21 points, or about a tenth of a percent. NASDAQ off 1, S&P up 4. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down just a fraction. IBM is by far the Dow's worst performer after failing to extend a three-quarter streak of sales growth. IBM shares are at their lowest level in more than 2 years. And Home Depot is the Dow's second biggest loser as investors worry about some of its biggest customers, home builders. Builders broke ground on fewer new homes in September, and it was only partly because of Hurricane Florence. So stock and home builders are falling. Credit Suisse and BTIG are warning of a continued slowdown in housing demand. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.